There we go. Okay. Good morning, everybody, for the recording. This is Tuesday morning, September 22nd, 8 a.m., Chem30A, and we're going to do a review for the test that you all have coming up this next week. So that's the game plan for this morning. And I think we're going to start off around conversions and looking at conversions. So Kimberly, you put something interesting in the chat, and I just want to ask real quick. You said you're not surprised. Oh, you're surprised not as many come to the live meetings. I was going to say, I thought you had said you were not surprised, and I was going to ask particularly why, but I'm really surprised that more people aren't coming to the live meetings. I mean, this is the chance, like office hours, to be able to ask questions, and I think it's really the timing that this is set at 8 a.m., and if we were at an in-person class and you felt that attendance was required in order to be able to do lab, then people would show up. But since it's not that sort of thing and they're recorded and people can watch them later, I guess they feel that they can just do that, which is fine. I mean, if that's the way they want to do, but that's not the way to get the best out of it. So I think the test is set at the time that it is, which, correct me if I'm wrong, it was 7. I can't remember if it started at 7 or if it started a little bit earlier, but that's Krista's normal time. Is the 6 o'clock to 7 o'clock is her normal set lecture time in the evenings. Krista usually teaches an evening lecture and lab, combined lecture and lab. And so she has lecture right before she has lab, and her start time is 6 o'clock, and her lecture usually goes from 6 to 7:30. And then from 7:30 to 9 is the lab scheduled time. And so she's just sort of sticking within that same format because that's what she knows and that's what she's done. But and I think also because that's the point where people are supposed to be in lecture for her class, for the main lecture. So she just scheduled it for the main lecture, which is what any of us would do if we were teaching in that format. But yes, I agree that for everybody else who has lab earlier in the day, that seems a little odd of a time to schedule a test. But that's why she's doing it. All right. Yes. Our schedule for in-person was supposed to be during the day for our lab meeting. And what happened was, partially it's my fault because I was supposed to teach all of the Chem 30As except for Krista's evening one. Krista's evening one was always supposed to be offset. But I last semester applied for a job with Cabrillo that is called Chemical Hygiene Officer, which means that I'm in charge of all of the safety and things associated with chemicals at Cabrillo in making sure that we meet all the government and local and state standards. And so I needed to pull back my teaching schedule a little bit to accommodate for that. And so they pulled me off the Chem30A. And since everything was remote, they reshuffled all of those classes and combined them with Krista's lecture since they were all online. And so the labs stayed where they were during the day, but Krista wound up picking up the lecture for more people than she would have normally. And that's why it's scheduled a little funky the way that it is. So that's kind of what's going on. But it's working since it's all online. I think it's turning out really well. And Krista has made a fantastic class. I'm so impressed every time I look at the Canvas shell and how much work she's put into the Canvas shell and how organized her communication is. You guys are getting an outstanding online course, much better than I would have done, to be honest with you, in terms of organization. She's just doing a phenomenal job. So that's great. It's working out, I think, very well. Okay, let's see what we can do about some of these conversions. And let's look at some of the problem types that we generally wind up doing. Within the conversions that you're doing right now, the two big things, so let's start off here, review for exam. And we're going to start off with conversions. oftentimes we call these dimensional analysis. And within these, I generally have a way in which I go through these types of problems too. So in terms of method, in terms of figuring out how to attack these process, these usually encompass word problems. So they're not given to you as a mathematical problem where you have a mathematical equation sitting in front of you. They're generally stated as a word problem. And so how do you take that word problem and turn it into something tangible, turn it into something that you can visually see what it is that you need to do? So the first thing that I like to do is I like to parse the problem. What that means is that means identify these different parts. So you want to identify the given, identify the desired, identify any equalities. And by that, we mean conversion factors. So color coding wise, what I normally do is I say, all right, my given, I usually color out in blue. My desired, I usually color out in red. My conversion factors or equalities, I'm coloring out in green. And then there may be other, oh, is it frozen? Shouldn't be. It's looking good on my screen. You're not seeing it though. Okay, so it does say that my screen share is frozen for some reason. It says I've been paused. Let's see if I can figure out how to get it unpaused. All right, let me stop the share and try something else and see if I can share it a different way. Sharing. I did this yesterday and it worked, so I know I can make it work. Yesterday was a horrible computer day. I had to cancel two classes yesterday because of the way the computer stuff broke down. Okay, we got another person, woohoo! Okay, Daisy is with us. Can you see what I've got on the screen now, Kimberly? Can you see what I was writing? All you see are my apps. You're not seeing, it is so interesting because it's coming through on my side. Well, that's not going to go well then, but it worked so well yesterday. Okay, let me try. I don't understand if I'm seeing it and it's showing as being shared. No, it still says my screen sharing is paused. That's why. So why is my screen sharing paused? Because I didn't see that yesterday. Yeah, let me hang on for a second. Let me think, because it's giving me a screen share paused note, but pause recording, stop recording, meeting info, chat, close caption, breakout rooms. See, what happened was I'm changing the way that I screen share because the old way that I normally screen share is broken until they update the app. Mac pushed out an update on the iPad operating system and it broke the way that I normally do the screen share. And because of that, I've had to try to find a new way to screen share. And I'm using a system called AirPlay. But for some reason, stop mirroring. You are screen sharing. So that's working. Still working. Still working. And I understand what's going on. Okay. Problem fixed. You should be able to see it now. Okay. That's good. We learned something new. So when I screen share, it is set up for either primary or secondary screen. And so I need to tell it what screen I want to share on. And if I move it off that screen, it stops the share, it freezes it. So that's going to throw me off a little bit here. Let me see if I can, now that I know what's going on, I'm going to try one more thing. And I think that's just where it's going to go. Yeah, it wants to be on that screen, so that's just the way I'm going to have to do it. That's okay. I can do that. That means that I'm going to be looking sideways a lot. Actually, I don't need to look at what I'm writing. I can look at you guys and just put that over what I'm writing because I can see what I'm writing down below. Okay, we're good. We're back in business. Welcome, Jose, and welcome, Daisy. All right. So, so here we go. What I was saying was that we're doing a review for the exam. We're doing dimensional analysis problems first. We'll pick up some other things and we'll do questions, whatever questions you guys want to do. But going through these conversion type problems or dimensional analysis type problems, I have a process that I do. My process is I parse the problem. I take the word problem. And I identify out the given, the desired, any equalities, any conversion factors that I'm going to need in order to be able to tackle that problem. I get all of those parsed out and identified. And then once I get that parsed out, the next thing that I do is I build a roadmap. And so this roadmap is looking like the given on the left-hand side, my desired, and then each arrow represents a conversion factor that takes me from one step to another. And so each of these then are essentially equalities. And there may be an equality that perhaps is missing that is in the problem. And in order to get from one unit to another, you may need to have some memorized conversion factors that are brought into the problem. These are going to be things that are like unit conversions, like going from millimeters to meters, or going from liters to microliters or something like that. So you may need to bring in some conversion factors that are other types of conversion factors. So we can color them in and we can say these guys here, this would be something that might be a memorized conversion factor. So memorized equalities. And these could be like metric prefixes. So those may have to come into the problem as well. Once we get the roadmap built, then what you do is you write out the mathematical problem. Write out the calculation. With equalities as conversion factors. Here you're going to calculate your answer, and then you're going to apply Sigfig's rules. Check your units. And then finally, write answer with units. With proper units. And that's it. That's my process. So parse the problem. Identify these different components, build a roadmap, find and utilize any memorized equalities that need to be in there to be able to complete the process, write out the calculation, calculate your answer, apply Sigfig's rules, check your units just to make sure that everything went the way that it was supposed to go, and then write your answer with the proper units. That's the whole process. Let's take a problem or two and show how we would go through and do that. Okay, so density is usually a good problem type to use for that. Let's say that a fish tank holds 100 gallons of water. Salt water has a density of 1.035 grams per milliliter. How many pounds of water will the fish tank weigh if filled to, let's say, 95.50 gallons . Okay, so it's a 100-gallon fish tank, but obviously we're not going to fill it right up to the top. So we're going to be about 5 gallons short. So we're 95.50 gallons, and we have a density that's there. And so we're going to parse this whole problem out, and we can just sort of say that this wasn't given to us in dimensions, but we can look at it and we could sort of envision the idea here that we've got a fish tank, and we're trying to figure out what this whole thing is going to weigh. I feel like we need to put a fish in here too. And we are 95.50 gallons. And so I'm starting to parse the problem as an image. And that's what I tend to do in my brain. I like to parse problems as images as much as I can. But really, parsing it out, find our given. What is our given? Our given here is the 95.50 gallons So this is where we're starting. And our desired, I always look for that how many, what is, those types of things that are your question. You're looking for those question components. And here they're saying how many pounds? And so we're looking for pounds is what we're looking for. And so this is our desired. And I'm keying in, like I said, as soon as I see how many, that thing that follows, that's what I'm looking for, whatever that unit is. And then anything else is generally a conversion factor of some type. And a key thing about conversion factors, equalities, usually have two units. Two or more units. Like grams per milliliter, that type of thing. So we're looking at grams and milliliters. And so here's one of our equalities is grams per milliliter. And then there's this other thing, a fish tank holds 100 gallons. And what is this? What am I doing with this thing? This is extraneous information. This was just something that they were setting up the problem with. And this is not needed in the problem. And then we have our conversion factor that is here, or our equality. Okay, so now I've sort of parsed the problem and I'm going to start my roadmap process. And as I start my roadmap process, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go from my given of gallons, and I'm going to do it without numbers. So as I start to write this out, I don't put any numbers into it. So gallons is where I'm starting. And we can even abbreviate that. We can just abbreviate it as GAL for gallons. And I'm going to pounds. So all the way over here, LBS, pounds. And in terms of equalities, we can even list out our equalities that we know. And we have an equality that says 1.035 grams equals 1 milliliter. So that's one of the equalities that we have. And we seem to be missing others. That can't be the only equality that we're going to need. And we'll see that indeed it's not, that we're going to need other equalities in order to complete this. But now what I do is when I start to look at this, I start to ask myself a series of questions. I start to break it down and I think, okay, what type of units are these? What type of measurements am I looking at? Gallons. Gallons is a volume. This is a volume that happens to be in English units. And pounds. Pounds is a mass, actually a weight technically, but we're going to cheat and use it as mass. It's a mass in English. And so I need a volume to mass conversion factor. And at some point in this calculation, I'm going to need to go from the volume side to the mass side. And so this is sort of an artificial partition that has been built where I need to transition from volume to mass. And let's look at what this density is down here. Density in grams per milliliter. This is a mass to volume conversion factor. But it's a mass in SI and a volume in SI. And that's okay. That's what's going to allow me to get across that line is going to be that particular conversion factor is going to allow me to cross this line. And so I want to make sure that I take the volume unit and set it on the volume side. In other words, I'm going to take milliliters and put it on the volume side. And I'm going to take grams and I'm going to put it on the mass side. And that allows me to bridge that divide. This is how I'm constructing the problem in terms of thinking about what different conversion factors I'm going to need. So now I need to get from grams to pounds And I need to get from gallons to milliliters, but at least now I'm in mass to mass and I just need to get grams to pounds. Well, I had given you in one of our recordings a set of three key conversion factors that I said that everybody should memorize. Those three key conversion factors can be extraordinarily helpful in any of these types of problems. So those key conversion factors, and I'm going to pull them back, and we'll call them three key equalities. Everyone should memorize. Just for daily life. So these three keys, and I just refer to them all the time as my three keys. So anytime I throw out that word three keys, that's what I'm referring to. The three key equalities are that one gallon equals 3.785 liters. One inch equals 2.54 centimeters. And 1 pound equals 453.6 grams. So these three keys, one is for volume. It's the volume key, the length key, L-E-N-G-T-H, and the mass key. So I have one for volume, one for length, one for mass. If you can remember those, you're going to see that that's all we need in order to finish out this problem, that I have a gram to pound conversion factor. So we can even number these. We can go through and we can say, all right, this is number one. I'm using number one right here. This is number two, number three, and number four. I'm going to use number four to complete that step. And then to go from gallons to milliliters, well, I don't have a gallons to milliliters, but what I do have is a gallons to liters. And so I could go from gallons to liters. And then within the metric system, liters to milliliters, I know how to do that. So that's another memorized conversion factor. So I'm going to go, let's see, gallons to liters. This is number two. And then some other conversion factors that we might need. These are SI conversion factors. So these are other things that need to be memorized. And we could say that for 1 liter, it equals 1,000 milliliters. And so that's another conversion factor, number five. And that's number five that is sitting there. And let's take number one because it looks like it's sort of off on its own up there. And so I have used, in terms of conversion factors that I have used number one, I have used number two, I have used number five, and I have used number four, and I won't need the length key in this one, in this problem. But you can see how I was able to now complete that roadmap. So now we have the problem, and we have, we've parsed the problem. We've created our roadmap. We now have conversion factors that take us from gallons to liters, liters to milliliters, milliliters to grams, and grams to pounds. This is a very different way of going through a problem than a lot of people will teach it. For instance, density is thought of as a formula in which I need to manipulate in order to solve for a particular variable. Dimensional analysis looks at a problem in a different way. Rather than saying I have a formula that I need to manipulate and solve for a variable, what dimensional analysis does is solve it dimensionally by the units and looking at unit conversions. And that's why I like to call these conversion factors. But sometimes what happens when you use a conversion factor, if you write it as a fraction, you have a hard time figuring out how you're going to write it into the problem when it's a fraction. And people think of a fraction as having a certain value associated with it. And if you invert the fraction, then you invert the value. And that's true. And so I like to not think of them as fractions. I like to think of them as equalities that have no particular way in which you write it, because I can take an equality and I could say that 1.03 5 grams equals 1 milliliter. It is also true that 1 milliliter equals 1.035 grams. And I could write it either way, and it holds. And there is no numerator or denominator when it's written out in a straight line like that. We're going to find that advantageous when we go to write it into the problem. So we'll see. Okay, we have our roadmap. I'm going to copy this roadmap. And I'm going to take it and put it back down here because we're going to use it to now construct our mathematical problem. So we'll go back and we'll look at how many gallons it was. It was 95.50 gallons. And we'll have to do a little bouncing. I'm going to apologize because the screen's not big enough to do this. If I were doing it out on a whiteboard on a wall, I would just do it all on a wall and everything would be there. You could see it all at one point. We'll have to bounce around a little bit. Let's start it off at 95.50 gallons of water. And we will now string together conversion factors. Remember that what I do is I take my unit that is here and apply it to the denominator. So that is my given. My given always goes in the denominator. My desired goes in the numerator. So I look at what my first desired is, liters. And I put liters in the numerator. Now I'm going to go back up, find conversion factor 2. Here it is. 1 gallon equals 3.785 liters. 1 goes with the gallons, 3.785 goes with the liters. 1 goes with the gallons, 3.785 goes with the liters. I have now canceled gallons and I'm in units of liters. Next conversion factor. Liters now comes down into my denominator. And I look at my next stop on my roadmap, milliliters, and I put that in the numerator. Then I go and I look at the equality and see what the values are. 1 liter equals 1,000 milliliters. 1,000 goes with milliliters, 1 goes with liters. 1,001. I have now canceled liters and I'm in units of milliliters. Now I'm going to go through that volume to mass conversion. I'm going to use the density here and I'm going to take milliliters and automatically apply it to my denominator. I'm going to then look at my roadmap, which takes me to grams. Grams will go in my numerator. Always going denominator to numerator in that way. We go back and we look at our equality. The equality that was given to us in the problem was 1.035 grams to 1 milliliter. So the 1.035 goes with the grams. 1.035 grams to 1 milliliter. Milliliters now cancel, and I'm in units of grams. I have one conversion factor left to make. Grams will automatically go in my denominator, and pounds, my final desired, goes in my numerator. And that was conversion factor number 4. We'll go back and look at it. That is 1 pound equals 453.6 grams. So 453.6 goes with the grams, 1 with the pounds. And all right, we don't need messages. I apologize. There we go. Grams cancels. And I am unit of pounds, and it's in the numerator. So whatever happens here, this is going to come out to pounds as I've gone through and done all of that. All right, now to put it into the calculator, I have a way that I like to put it into the calculator too. Here's my method. In the calculator, I will write 95.50 times 3.785. times 1,000 times 1.035. And then anything in the denominator, I use the division key, 453.6. All of the ones, they're not going to matter because when you multiply by one or divide by one, you get the same value. So I just ignore anything that's a one. So anything in the numerator, I multiply by anything in the numerator. Anything in the denominator, I string them together with division keys. So if I had another unit that was here, I would do divided by that other unit that's in the denominator. And I punch them into the calculator that way. Once I put them in, I don't round anything yet. I write down the entire answer from the calculator. So let's see if I can get a calculator up. I'm doing a little jogging around here to get a calculator on screen at the same time that I have the rest of the numbers. Okay, so we're going to do 95.50 times 3.785 times 1,000 times 1.035 divided by 453.6 equals. All right, we're getting a value which is 824.777033.73. And this is going to be in pounds. And now I have the answer. So the numerators multiply together and the denominators multiply together, but the denominators stay as a dividend. Daisy, let me address that in a second. Let me finish this problem out since I'm so close, and I will come back and I will explain why I do the way that I do that and why it makes sense. So I won't forget your question. So hang on to it. Okay, when I go back and I assess significant figures, there's, oops, four in my starting. There are four in my liters to gallons. This is a definition in terms of milliliters to liters, because that's within the metric SI system. There are four within my grams to milliliters, and there are four within my pounds to grams. So everything is four or definition. We go with the smallest number, so we round to four. We count out, starting from the left to the right, four decimal places, or four places, not decimal places, but four positions. One, two, three, four. We drop our line and we do our rounding. If the value to the right is five or greater, we round up. If the value to the right is five or less than five, we round down. So the answer, the final answer to this problem is going to be 824.8 pounds. And that's how much that fish tank is going to weigh if we exclude the glass and the stand and the other stuff. Just the water itself would weigh 824 pounds. That's a lot of weight for a fish tank. But that's how much a 100-pound fish tank weighs. Okay. Daisy, let me address your question. You're asking, if I string together a number of different conversion factors, let's look at it as if I am, and I'm just going to apply a bunch of units here. So let's say that I've got 8.63 centimeters times 92.7 centimeters times 6.06 centimeters. So I'm getting cubic centimeters. And then in the bottom, I'm going to divide this by a number of values. Let's do time and say that we're just multiplying some time units here. 72.6 seconds. What else could I put in here? If I've got volume readings and let's put a unit of feet in here or meters, 301.7 meters. Okay, and I want to calculate this out and see what this is going to calculate out to. When you do a calculation like this, if I have A times B times C over D times E, this can be thought of as being put into the calculator in two different ways. We could think of A times B times C in grouped together, or we could do D, and we could do D times E grouped together. And this could be split up into a calculation now where I can say this is A times B times C times 1 over the quantity D times E. I can also state that when I multiply by a fraction, it is the same as dividing by its reciprocal. So I can say this is A times B times C divided by the quantity D times E. And so you can certainly put it into the calculator that way, but there's another way to think about this. Another way to think about this mathematically is to say, if I have A times B times C over D times E, I can say that this is equal to A over 1 times B over 1 times C over 1 times 1 over D times 1 over E, breaking it up. And now the ones that are here in these denominators don't really matter. So I can just say this is A times B times C. But now in the same trick that I applied here, where I said multiplying by a fraction is the same as dividing by its reciprocal is really D over 1, D times E over 1. I can do the same thing here. This is divided by D over 1, divided by E over 1. And because these are both over 1, I can make all the ones go away. And so this just becomes A times B times C divided by D divided by E. Mathematically, these two statements are equivalent. And so my idea of punching them into the calculator is that every time you punch values into a calculator, you have, for every key that you hit, you have something like maybe a 1% possibility of hitting the wrong key, maybe slightly less than 1%, but those percents multiply. So by the time you have to strike in 14, 15, 20, 30 keys, the chances of hitting a wrong key go up with each keystroke. And so why not find a way, instead of having to input parentheses and do all of that, why not find a way to enter it with the least number of keystrokes possible? That way you have the least possibility of making an error. So what I do is anything in the numerator, I hit multiply. Anything that comes in the denominator, I just hit divided by each of those things that come in the denominator and string them together in that way, creating a less number of keystrokes. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. If these were single numbers, that would be 13 keystrokes versus 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 keystrokes. You can see how the keystrokes go down by changing the mathematical operation in the way that I'm doing it. And in my brain, it works out fairly well to just take and multiply everything together, which is in the numerator, and then use a divided by key for anything in the denominator. And mathematically, it works out to be the same. So that's why I do it that way. And a little math review in terms of multiplication and division. All right, how are we doing? How did that go problem-wise in terms of a process and thinking it through? Awesome. Okay. What else would you like me to do? Would you like me to do another example of a problem like that or a different type of problem? Yes, please. Okay. Daisy, let's do it. Some of the problems that we tend to do, and these are harder for me to make up, deal with medications and dosages. Let me see if I have one on hand. I know what I can do. I think I probably, the SI system, we could talk about the SI system in a little bit more detail too. Let me go to 30A class. Last time I taught it, my exams, and I'll pull a problem or two off my exam. Oh, you have percents too. We need to deal with percents. That's, and temperature conversions. Oh my, we have a lot to cover. Well, we have 2 days to cover it. So let's not panic too, because we have today and we have the next class meeting as well to go over percents. I was looking to see if I had one that was more like a medication. And I have temperature conversions, but not. All right, so let's go for a quiz. Let's see if I have one in the quizzes that will help us. Not what I want. The medication ones are harder to come up with because I have to look things up to make it more tangible. And usually, I have some that are sitting around. And those just aren't doing it for me. Okay. Let's do. A certain medication has a dose of 1.62 micrograms per kilogram of body weight. If a patient weighs, and let's also say per kilogram per day. So we'll put day in here as a second unit. If a patient weighs 165 pounds, how many micrograms of medication should be prescribed? Okay, so normally what I would do is I would take and I would look up an actual medication. I would look up a dose. I would figure out the pill size in which they come and how many, and we would calculate how many pills we were supposed to do, that whole type of thing. But this will serve to do what we want to do here. Okay, so parsing the problem. First thing to do is to identify the given. How about I ask you guys, in terms of thinking about a given, what looks like the given in this problem? Or actually, let's not even identify the given first. Let's start with the desired, because the desired being the question is oftentimes the easiest thing out of everything to identify. Sometimes the given can be more difficult, but let's find the desired. So what is desired here? How many what? It is the dosage, and instead of milligrams, it's micrograms. So I'm using a symbol that you may not be familiar with. This symbol is micro. So this is the mu symbol. And when we do milli, and this is good because we just said that the metric system, the SI system, is a little bit difficult for some of us. And so being new, this is a good thing to look at. So symbols, the lowercase m, this is milli. The mu symbol is micro. And so milli is times 10 to the minus 3. Micro is times 10 to the minus 6th in terms of how we use that. So yes, how many micrograms of medication do we need per day that we're prescribing? And so our desired is micrograms. That's what we're shooting for. And I'm trying to be consistent in my color coding. so that we always do it the same. Okay, now, my given was the weight. My given was in the pounds the individual weighs, 165 pounds. This is my starting spot. This is my given. And then the dosage, this is going to be one of my conversion factors, is micrograms per kilogram of body weight per day. And so I've got enough to start parsing this problem out. And we're going to move this off to the side over here as an aside on the SI system. Okay, so in our roadmap wise, we're going from pounds. So we'll start off with our roadmap. We're starting off at pounds. And we are going to go to, and this is, let's be clear too, that this is pounds of person. And we're going to micrograms of medication. So all the way over here, microgram meds. And that's where we've got to go. And we can see that one of the things that we need to do here, when I look at the type of units that these are, this is a mass, which is an English system, but it's also a mass of the person. This is a mass, but it's in the SI system, and this is of the medication. So at some point, what I need to do is I need to span the gap between the person and the meds. And that's what that conversion factor that is here, micrograms per kilogram, this is micrograms of medication to kilograms of person. And so actually, this conversion factor is going to take me right here. And I'm going to go from kilograms of the person to micrograms of the meds. And that's what that conversion factor actually does. So all I need to do now is I need to get from pounds to kilograms. Well, if I go back to those three keys, and we remember the three keys, one of the three keys was the mass key. That told me that 1 pound equals 453.6 grams. Now, the textbook has all these different conversion factors. The textbook, and if you look online and you Google things online, you'll find a number of different conversion factors. For instance, you'll find that 1 pound equals 2.2 kilograms is a conversion factor that the book may give you or that you may find online. However, when you look at the sig figs that are associated with these different conversion factors, and we think, well, how many sig figs do they have? This key that I'm asking you to memorize has 4 sig figs. This key down here that is a pounds to kilogram, this only has 2 sig figs. Which one of those gives us more accuracy in terms of using it as a conversion factor, the 2 sig figs or the 4 sig figs? 4 sig figs, right? And so I try to get away from all of these other conversion factors that the book throws out at you or that you may find online. And I try to stick with those three keys because those three keys are given to you in 4 sig figs. And they allow you to use the conversion factor without truncating what's happening in the problem. They are going to make it so that the answer that you get is going to be the same as the answer that your instructor would expect. That's why I try to use those memorized conversion factors, is because they have more sig figs associated with them. They're just a better conversion factor. They have more accuracy to them. More precision, not accuracy, more precision is what we're looking at there. Okay, so this conversion factor allows me to go from pounds of person to grams of the person. That's that conversion factor. And then can I get from grams to kilograms? Do I know that conversion factor as well? We do, or at least we should in the metric system. So grams to kilograms, if I'm looking at grams, it is 1,000 grams equals 1 kilogram. So the metric prefixes, as we were looking at them, kilo, K, which equals kilo, is times 10 to the third or 1,000. That's that prefix. So in terms of prefixes here, kilo is greater than one. I'm going to move it up. And then I'm going to make a little more room between these. So I have prefixes which are greater than one and prefixes which are less than one. Mega. Times 10 to the sixth would be the one above that. So we're going with milli, micro, and one more that fits in here that we should remember too, that's good to remember, is centi, lowercase c. Centi times 10 to the minus 2. Okay, so there's a bunch of metric prefixes, and that allows us to get from grams to kilograms. And now this problem is completed. So we've completed the entire roadmap. And once we complete the roadmap, now we can string it together as a mathematical problem and we can solve the mathematical problem. So we started off with 165 pounds. So my given was 165 pounds. And we could write of the person in there if we want, or we could just leave it at pounds. And we're going to go from pounds to grams using the, there it is, pound to gram conversion factor. So I will take and write pounds in the denominator and grams in my numerator. For every 1 pound, it's 453.6 grams. Now I'm going to go from grams, and I need to go back and look at my roadmap, always looking at where I'm going, grams to kilograms. So kilograms will go in the numerator. For every 1,000 grams, it's 1 kilogram. And we can keep track of the units as we cross them off. Sometimes this is helpful to know where you're at. So right now we're in kilograms. Kilograms will automatically go into my denominator. And I'm going to go to my next stop on my roadmap, kilograms to micrograms. So this is kilograms of the person to micrograms of the medicine. And that's going to be my last stop. And actually, maybe what I want to do is, since that's my last stop, I'll style that in red in my numerator. And we need to find that conversion factor. That conversion factor was represented here, 1.62 micrograms per kilogram a person. 1.62 micrograms per 1 kilogram a person. And now we can write this problem out and throw it into the calculator. So calculator wise, we'll clear out what we had in the memory, 165 times 453.6 divided by 1,000 and then multiplied by 1.62. Now notice that I did the division as I hit it. So I did multiply, divide, multiply. Anything in the denominator, I'm hitting the division key. Anything in the numerator, I'm hitting the multiply by key. And so I'm keying it in 165 times 453.6 divided by 1,000 multiplied by 1.62. I believe it is the commutative property that allows me to change the order within the multiplication and division. And yes, I'm placing them as I see them. Now you could do it either way. I could key it in this way. I could do everything in the numerator and come back and do everything in the denominator. I could do 165 times 453.6 times 1.62 divided by 1,000 and come back and do everything in the denominator. That's okay too. They are equivalent. And so you could do it either way. Sometimes I just like to do it as I see it. This equals 121.24728. And that is going to be kilograms canceled. I'm in micrograms of meds. So that's in my micrograms of medication. Okay, now we go back and we do sig figs. So the process, we keep the same. 3 sig figs in my mass, 4 in my unit conversion. Definition in the grams to kilograms. And in micrograms to kilograms, this is medication to person. This is definitely a measured, and this is measured at 3, and 3 then turns out to be my smallest. So at 3 sig figs, I'm rounding at the ones place, and my answer is going to be 121 micrograms of medication is needed. And then because I always have a lot of work that I do with my problems, I like to box in my final answer at the end so that my instructor has an easy time finding it, or I should say so that your instructor, so that I have an easy time finding it, so that I know what I want to grade. Okay, why aren't all the divisions definitions? That's a good question too. Let's go back to the difference between what is a definition and what contains sig figs. So we have the two different types of values, two different types of numbers. We have numbers which are exact. These exact values are either definitions or these are counted values. And then we have values which are not exact. And by not exact, we mean contain precision. These are all measured. And so these over here are exempt from sig figs. Definitions and counted values, these are numbers that have infinite number of sig figs is the way that we say it. We say that basically sig figs don't apply to these. Basically, we don't put them into the rules. But these guys over here, the measured ones, these have sig figs. And we need to track those. So it's not about what's in the numerator or what's in the denominator as to whether or not they are a definition or a measured value. It's really about how the value was obtained as to whether it is measured or whether it is a definition or a counted value. So what fall under these definitions? A definition is usually something that is within the same unit of measure. For instance, if I go feet, 1 foot equals 12 inches, or 3 feet equals 1 yard. These are definitions. 1,000 millimeters equals 1 meter, or 1,000 liters equals 1 kiloliter. These are things that are units of measure within the same system. It's how the system is defined. And by defined, we mean definition. Counted values are a little bit easier because we generally understand when something is counted when we're looking at units that can't be divided. For instance, if we're counting the number of pens or we're counting the number of people, those things are counted values. And so those would be exact as well. But now these things that have sig figs that are measured, these are things that fit within different units of measure. For instance, English to SI. This would be things like 1 pound equals 453.6 grams. this is two rulers lined up between two different systems. We're in the English system and the SI system, and therefore these are two rulers that are lined up against each other. This is not a definition. This is a measured quantity that allows us to relate one system to another system. The 1 gallon equals the 3.785 liters. Again, this is a system that has a number of sig figs. And so this has 4 sig figs and 4 sig figs for each one of these definitions, measured quantities. Other measured quantities would be things that you have to measure. If we're looking at a volume or a mass, and it's an individual volume or mass for an object, it has to be a measured value. And so it would fall under these as measured as well. So it's not about whether it occurs in the numerator or the denominator. It's about what type of measurement or definition it is. So here we were going grams to pounds. Those are two different units of measure, grams being SI, pounds being English. This is something that has sig figs. Kilograms to grams. This is within the same unit of measure, both within the SI system. So this is a definition defining that there are 1,000 grams in a kilogram. And then micrograms to the kilograms a person, this definitely has to be measured. So they always have to have a different unit of measure if they are measured units, Kimberly, I think is what you're trying to say. So the way that you tell whether or not they are a definition or measured is whether or not they have different units of measure, different systems of measure is a way to put it. So yes, if they have different systems of measure, grams to kilograms, that does it. Okay, there's only one exception to that, Kimberly, which is an important exception to make. And I'll make it in a different color. This is a big exception. The 1 inch equals 2.54 centimeters. This is a definition. And you think this normally would land, we would normally see this land on this side over here because you're going from English to SI. But here's the thing, when this was done and they actually did the experiment somewhere in the 1970s, I think it was done. It might have been before 1970, 1 inch equaled 2.5400000 before they got to the next decimal place. There were so many zeros that were here that they decided to make a definition. And they decided that 1 inch would be exactly 2.54 centimeters. And what they adjusted was not the centimeter. What they adjusted was the inch. And so there is what is called an imperial inch. And then there is a metric inch, essentially. And most people don't even realize that there's a difference. And yet different states will use the imperial inch and some states will use the metric inch. And when they go and they decide on what the state boundaries are, when they have different people who go out and survey it, and they survey versus metric versus SI, it's off by that little tiny fraction between the two different units of measure. And there are disagreements about where the state lines are based on who did the survey and whether they used an imperial inch or whether they used a metric inch. And over state lines, those little tiny bits of numbers add up, and it can add up to hundreds of meters on where that state line is. And so it actually is important what unit of measure you're actually using. But within the sciences, we decided that this 1 inch equals 2.54 centimeters was an exact definition. And so there's a little thing on metric SI units. Okay, what other questions can I answer for you? We've done a couple of problems. I think I've exemplified my process of going through and parsing the problem so that we see how the problem is parsed. using color coding to break it out, building a roadmap, stringing together each one of your conversion factors or equalities in order to get from point A to point B, writing out the calculation, calculating the answer, applying the sig figs rules. I didn't stress as much the unit check. Maybe we should go back and just show what I mean by that. But then making sure that you're writing the answer with the proper units. What do I mean by unit check? This was a good example. I'm crossing out my units as I'm going through and doing it. And I'm looking and I'm going gallons to gallons, numerator to denominator. I'm crossing them off. Liters to liters, numerator to denominator. I'm crossing them off. Milliliters to milliliters, numerator to denominator. They're canceling each other out. I'm crossing them off. Grams to grams until I'm left with one unit of measure. And that one unit of measure should be in my numerator when I'm done. And it should be the unit that I'm looking for at the end of my roadmap. That's what I mean by analyzing your units and making sure that the units are canceling appropriately. So that's that last sort of skill set. And I put it, embedded it in there in the process as I was doing it. So I didn't actually go back and do it at the end, but that was kind of a nice way to go back and check. Okay. And we've covered some of the metric prefixes. Maybe one more thing that I can do is on metric prefixes. Let me copy these and let's look at the SI system in a little more detail. Okay, within the SI system, we have the base unit, which is times 10 to the zero, which equals times one, because anything to the zero power is one. So we have the base unit. Then we have a set of metric prefixes, which takes us to things that are less than one and things that are greater than one. Now, normally what we do is we go in units of three. So times 10 to the minus third, times 10 to the minus sixth, the next jump would be times 10 to the minus ninth. And that one is nano. And so they go in units of three, but within there, before units of three, there's a few that take us within units of two and units of one, deca, centa, milli. There are the analogous ones that take us to the ones that are greater, but they're very infrequently used. So we almost never see them. And what I tend to do is I tend to go for the bang for your buck. I tend to go for the big ones. Which ones should you invest time and energy in memorizing? The ones that you should really invest time in memorizing is kilo, centi, and milli. Even micro doesn't get used as frequently as those three. Those are the big three that you should really know off the top of your head in moving forward. What's above this? Giga, which takes us times 10 to the ninth. Okay, so for those of us that are not used to the metric system, now using computer memory, most of us have a sense of how many kilobytes, megabytes, gigabytes, terabytes. We know we have a common vernacular that is integrating into our language because of computers and the way that we think about computer memories and even computer speeds. And so if you think about it in terms of computers, it's a way to remember the order in which they go up. If you think kilobytes, megabytes, gigabytes, after gigabytes comes terabytes. Terabytes would be another order of three. So 9 plus 3 would be times 10 to the 12th. So tera is times 10 to the 12th. And it's a way of remembering how to go up. How to remember how to go down, that's harder. Down, you just sort of have to memorize centi, milli, micro, nano. But we also don't tend to use these times 10 to something, although we can, and maybe I should show you. So when I say kilo times 10 to the third, you're saying that it is not 10,000 times greater, but it's 1,000 times greater than the meter. So rather than 10,000, it's only 1,000 times greater, Kimberly. And that's what I was going to show you, is that when we think about a base unit, what I would say is that if I take this system, let's copy it and think about another way to use it. And it looks a little messy, so we're going to clean it up. And we're going to get rid of this. And I would like to space these out just a little bit. Caught the 9 there. Okay. So what I would say is that one, if we wanted to look at base, it's not the way I want to do it. Need to get it straight in my head. 1 kilobase, whatever the base unit is going to equal 8 times 10 of the base, which is going to equal 1,000 of the base unit. 1 megabase is going to equal 1 times 10 to the 6th of that base, which is going to equal 1,000,000 of the base. And so what we tend to do is we tend to drop out this component of 1 times 10 to the 6th, and we just go 1 to 1,000,000 or 1 to 1,000. That's one way to do it, but we certainly could create the conversion factor 1 to 1 times 10 to the 3rd. In the same way, I would say that 1 centibase is equal to 1 times 10 to the minus 2 of the base unit. This is equal to 0.01 of the base unit. But we tend to frequently turn this around and say that it is 100 centi of the base equals 1 base unit. Same sort of way here, 1 microbase. Oh, I want to do milli. I wanted to do milli first. 1 millibase is equal to 1 times 10 to the minus 3 of the base unit, which is equal to 0.001 base unit. But we tend to turn it around and say that 1,000 of these millibase is equal to 1 base unit. And so we turn it around a little bit, and I can show you that we could do the conversion either way. Let me show you an example. Convert 36.2 millimeters into meters. We can do this in a multiple of ways. 36.2 millimeters times a conversion factor. If we go back up and we look at milli, milli was here. It's times 10 to the minus 3. 1 millibase equals 1 times 10 to the minus 3 base. Let's use that conversion factor. 1 millimeter equals 1 times 10 to the minus 3 meters. And so what I would key in is I would key in 36.2 times 1e minus 3 equals. The 1e minus 3, this is calculator sort of lingo for 1 times 10 to the minus 3. And then I'm going to hit the equals key. You can watch me key it in. 36.2. Now on some calculators, okay, I'll hit times 1. On some calculators, it is the E. On some calculators, it is EE on your calculator. On mine, it's EE, and it resides right here. EE minus 3, and then I hit equals, and I get 0.0362 meters. Let's key it in a different way. Let's key it in 36.2 millimeters times it is 1,000 millimeters that equals 1 meter. Now I will key in 36.2 divided by 1,000. This is likewise 36.2 divided by 1,000 is going to equal 0.0362 meters. And one more way, 36.2 millimeters times, for every one millimeter, it is 0.001 meters. So this is going to be 36.2 times 0.001. And this is also going to be 0.0362. You can do it all three ways. And so there are ways to key in these guys. We tend not to show you how to key these in as much because it's a little bit more complicated to key it in. And yet you should know and should learn how to key in these things that are in scientific notation. Memorizing it this way, that there's 1,000 of a milli to get one of the base unit, is a good thing to know and an easy way to key it in. It is also true that 1 milli equals 1 × 10⁻³, which is 0.001 meters. And that works out to be the same too. If you look at it, these two are actually inverses of each other. Dividing by 1,000 is the same as multiplying by 0.001. And so they're just inverse relationships. Anyway, that's a little thing about the metric prefixes. So you can use any of the definitions, I think is what I'm trying to say, is that they're defined in terms of scientific notation, 10 to a power. You can certainly use them times 10 to the power if you can remember how to key them into your calculator appropriately. If you cannot, then you can convert them into your head. And like I said, bang for your buck, it's these three: centi, milli, and kilo. And if you can remember that there are 1,000 milli to 1 meter, there are 100 centi to 1 meter, and for every 1,000 meters, you get 1 kilometer. That's going to suffice and get you through just about everything you need to do. All right. How was that for SI? Is that helping for the SI system, or did I create more confusion? I'm hoping that I actually just showed you some different ways to do it. Sometimes showing you multiple ways makes more confusion, but hopefully not. Hopefully that solidified things a little bit. Okay. I think, how are we doing on time? I think we're about out of time. We're supposed to end somewhere around 9:25. No worries, Daisy. So we've covered a good bit of ground. We've covered some more process on how to go through and do the dimensional analysis problems. And we've done a good review of both conversion factors, exact versus definitions and counted versus measured. So that was really good. And then a little bit on the SI system. Think about what it is you want to do next class. Come in with a plan of what you need answered. Go through, do your studying, make sure that you're studying throughout the week so that you're ready to go. And come in with questions on the next class. And I'll address whatever those questions are. And we'll tackle them, whether they're sample problems that you didn't know how to do and you'd really like some help on how to do that type of problem, or whether it's with metric prefixes or conversions or density or whatever it is. Let me know. That's what we'll deal with. Okay? Sound good? All right, let's cut it at that. Remember, I've got office hours too. So I've got office hours after this, starting from 10 to 11. So a half hour from now, I'll be in office hours. And then on Monday and Wednesday. I have office hours from 2:30 to 3:30. And you guys are always welcome to those too. Okay. All right. We'll see you next class. You guys take care.